I'm Jen Taylor Campbell, your host. We're going to do something totally different today because I'm using a new platform. And I did it today because I'm with James Goodlatte. James, how are you?
Awesome.
Awesome. So we're doing a live stream. And the reason I chose James to jump in and guinea pig this is because we've done 7 videos together. We did the first one about your parenting journey. So it was called Alternative Parenting, Alternative Schooling, 3 Kids, a Fitness Business. And then we did a 5-part series where I was your client. And we went over this 5-part series on corrective exercises. And then we did minimizing pollutants, pesticides, and toxins in our homes, which I am super passionate about. And today we have a couple options of talking. We are absolutely shooting from the hip today. One is I want you to go over your 5 foundations because it's come up in every single podcast, but we haven't spoken specifically about it. Also, mindfulness, another thing that's probably come up in every single one, but we haven't talked specifically. And my favorite for today is genetics and epigenetics. So, James, I'm going to let you kind of take it away.
Awesome. You know how dangerous that is to put all of those categories in front of a 30-minute discussion, right?
I do. So we're not going to hit all of them, guys. We're going to see what we hit.
It's a wonderful opportunity for me to be concise. And instead of I often come, over prepared with so much information, I'm going to say that I'm coming, like we said, shooting from the hip today. So I really would welcome any questions and direction in that way. Now, I will start by saying that, one of the reasons that we're together is that I am the founder of a company called Fit for Birth, which provides continuing education to fitness professionals and also to pre and postnatal people who want personal training and things like this. So just to give you a sense of the background where I'm coming from, my 5 foundations are the things that we teach our clients and our trainers to be really good at. And they're natural 5 foundations. They're proper breathing. I'll give a little bit of description on each one, but first I'll start by saying breathing, movement, nutrition, lifestyle, and mind or thoughts. So breathing is really like, you breathe 20,000 times a day, and most people are accessing the wrong muscles, which are hardwired with the brain to put you into a stressful state. That's why we say, hey, pause, slow down, take a deep breath. Well, hopefully that deep breath isn't up here. Hopefully it's more into the belly and ribs. That's diaphragmatic breathing. And in a nutshell, if I just cut it right there, breathing can do a lot of things. We can change our state. We can do fast breathing, slow breathing, all sorts of things. But just if you just made one shift from this discussion right now, it would be breathe into your belly and ribs more often, moment to moment throughout the day when it comes to you, and you will watch as your physiology shifts you to a less stressful state. Super important. Movement. This is an obvious one for us as a fitness company. Exercise is it's a human necessity for being healthy, which is a little bit different than saying, oh, I want to be healthy, I'm going to go exercise. Well, it's sort of like this. If you're a human being, you actually need a lot of movement in the day in order to have a baseline of proper operating, for your chemistry on the inside. And so, but most of us know that at this point, it's just a matter then of doing the ones that work well for us. And you don't have to even go to the gym. Centenarians and the longest living, healthiest people in the world, being centenarians, those are people who, go for walks and bike rides and things like this. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be a big deal. But moving to nutrition, this is, oh my gosh, this is so crazy because there are very healthy vegans and then there are very healthy carnivores. So what do you do? Well, I'll leave this one alone by saying, you have to pick what's right for you, and you have to figure it out for you, because there are people in every camp that will have had wonderful healing experiences and feel thriving and amazing. And you've really got to pick this for you. Did you want to say something about that, Jen?
Yes, I do, because no, I love this being brought up the way you did, because you said you have really healthy people in every camp and you have really unhealthy people in every camp. And so I don't think it's as much as the, cause I have been carnivore. I did it for 9 months and then probably 80% for another, like we did a year of carnivore. And in that year, it was like 100% really strict down to like 70%, not as strict. And back to a, like a traditional diet with carbs and stuff and using heavy weights and using more cardio. I've done the whole gamut. And it doesn't matter which food plan you choose. It does matter, though, if you're using it in a healthy way or an unhealthy way. So I just love that you brought that up. And that's what I wanted to say. Like any food plan can be great and any food plan can be an absolute disaster.
100%. Yeah.
Right.
And yeah. This is where, you know, when we're just signposts, this episode, anyone who's watching this now or in the recording, it's a signpost to help you to navigate your own inner wisdom. And so please activate your own inner wisdom as you make, you know, decisions, right? And feel into your intuition, right?
Yeah.
So we're talking about the five foundations. We've got breathing, movement, nutrition, and then lifestyle is kind of like where I throw. I'm by the way, I'm saving the most important one for last, being mind. Lifestyle is where I throw the sort of like, well, where can we throw a number of things? This is where household toxins would come in, your circadian rhythms, so your habits around sleeping, EMF radiation, you know, how much we hold cell phones around us and, you know, on our pregnant bellies, which are bodies of water that transmit and stuff like this. And so, you know, just a big category of collecting. Well, and by the way, that's lifestyle, community, having fun, you know, things like that can fit into that. So that's a big category, but I'm just giving a sense of these natural sort of habits that we can adopt. To discuss sleep for a moment in this category, I would just say that, you know, before we invented the light bulb, we moved according to the rhythm of the sun, and that light has a massive effect in our cells, in our chemistry, and so does darkness. And if you want to have the appropriate hormone release at the right time and stuff like that, you have to at least honor that to some extent. So for example, when the sun is going down, and if we on all the light bulbs, that's giving our system a bit of a messed up signal. And then we wonder why we might have trouble sleeping or things like this, right? So that's in a nutshell how that might work. These are all very natural five foundations. You know, like, by the way, where I come from with these is, other than various mentors and things I've picked up along the way, is that, you know, what did our ancestors do? Because we still have the same sort of DNA code, getting us ready for talking about genetics in a moment. Our DNA code is used to having sun to produce vitamin D, for example, right? So if we no longer go into the sun, then, well, that has an effect as to what our chemistry is literally creating, this hormone, right? This vitamin. And so then the fifth one is thoughts and mind. And the reason why I say, like, I saved that one for last is because, well, this one is the one that can actually override all of the others, because belief is the most powerful force, I think, on the planet. And now whether you believe something that is accurate and helpful or empowering, or whether you believe something that is inaccurate and unhelpful and disempowering, that makes a huge difference. And, you know, I like the story of the two shoe salesmen where, you know, like sales aren't going so well on the mainland. So the boss sends them to the island to say, hey, check out whether or not you're, you know, we can sell shoes on the island. And the first salesperson goes and looks around at the island and sees that nobody is wearing shoes. And so comes back, you know, hanging his head low and in defeat tells his boss, nobody wears shoes. And then the second salesperson goes to the island, looks around and sees that nobody's wearing shoes and comes back excited and burst open the front door and says, oh my gosh, nobody's wearing shoes. Nobody's wearing shoes. It's the same phrase, but it meant two totally different things to two different people. And that is what gets you up in the morning, gets you to exercise, has you eat the right foods for you. All these things you know, your mind is the most important one. So that's the five foundations in a nutshell. I'll pause for a moment before we shift topics.
Because the next thing that I mentioned, and I'm glad that you went over each of those so that we know what they all are and they make sense. And I love the attitude and the mindfulness, of course, because it really is. It's even funny, like grammar, like if you say the sentence, time to eat, grandma, or time to eat, comma, grandma, you know, are you eating, grandma? Or are you telling her it's time to eat? It is a lot about how you say things and what you say and your attitude in them and all of those things. And the next thing is you talk a lot about meditation and different things and you focus a lot on mindfulness. So that's like a deeper dive on that one foundation. I really want to jump in and hear about genetics and epigenetics just because I'm so unfamiliar with what that is and how it relates in, I mean, you're a dad. So from a parenting perspective, a pregnant woman perspective, a long-term, can you just jump in on that one?
Yeah. Yeah. So let's start first with genetics and then move to epigenetics. So
okay.
Now, mind you, I have a few different roles where I do research for longevity as well as for fit for birth. And I put these concepts together for professionals. And so the last about 6 or 7 months has been primarily focused into genetics and epigenetics. And what that's meant is that I have looked at scientific research, read through lots of it, not understood a lot of it, and then had to really go and figure out what the heck is this. I've read books. I've communicated even with one of the world's leading authorities on genetics, just to kind of ask a question. His name was George Church, and out of Harvard, and the guy who's kind of almost most known for CRISPR, the guy whose team is trying to recreate the woolly mammoth in the next 5 years. Okay. In case many of your viewers may have heard of that. So, so that gives a sense of where I'm just getting my, I'm just a guy who loves doing research and putting things together and help simplifying things. Right. So, I should also qualify this whole conversation by saying this is that what we are learning, our scientists are learning in epigenetics and genetics right now, is so radically running so fast, so forward, and honestly changing month to month that it should almost be presumed that take this with a grain of salt. I'm going to be general with it and make it simple, but there's a very good chance that some of the things I say are going to be, you know, misplaced or something like that in the future. So just keep that with a grain of salt. As an example, you know, when they started mapping the genome, they had finished something like 85% of it. Mapping just means like finding out which genes are in which order for the human species, right? And they had finished something like 85% of it by 2003. And that was pretty good because that's a lot, right? Like in that was a foundational point for all this genetic stuff and what is now becoming regenerative medicine and stuff being pulled off of that. And so, but then in the next 20 years, almost, we then got closer to 99%. Now, when we first started, it was assumed that we would have found something like 100,000 genes in the human genome. And right now, it is now thought that there's somewhere between 20,000 to 25,000. And so just that's just in the last, you know, decade or so that we have come to that realization. And so that's what I'm saying, that this stuff changes radically because it is such
all the time.
Field. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So now here's and I sort of have a 1, 2, 3. And my outline is let's discuss genetics simply. Then number two is let's understand epigenetics. And then number three, let's look at some of the specific outcomes that are happening with pregnancy, with fathers and mothers who are getting together and transferring their genetic code to your offspring. So genetics.
Correct.
Genetics, every cell in your body that has a nucleus has DNA. And DNA is made up of what's called 4 base pairs. And it's like letters of the alphabet. These are, you know, made of proteins or I actually have to go relook what they're actually made of. Nucleotides, whatever it is they're made of, they actually are called A, C, T, and G. Now, A, C, T, and G are these, you have hundreds and thousands and hundreds of thousands. These base codes are, your DNA sequence can be made up of hundreds and thousands of these A, C, T, G letters. Now, what's important to know about this is, from a genetic standpoint, is that these letters are essentially get shuffled up when you make a baby, and then they get distributed mm-hmm. to the baby, right? So that's genetics. You're passing your genetics, and the genetics you have are the basket with which you have to choose, that your body chooses, which genetics to sort of give to the child, if you will. Now, this is a little bit interesting because a woman's eggs have been actually created at her birth from her mother. So we are looking at generational passing down of genetics in that way. Now, here's also a really interesting thing is that this, if you just look at a long string of A, C, T, G, 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 T, T, A, 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 C, C, T, whatever, and you just keep going, 99.9% of that is exactly the same gen for you and me. And for everyone else who's listening. So your genetic sequence of these ATCG base pairings, they're not that different from each other. Now, if you're an identical twin, they are 100% the same. But for you and me, Jen, for example, we might have AACCTTGG. I might have that. Mm-hmm. And then you might have AACCTTGA. For example, and that would be the 0.1% along the way that creates the difference between one human being and another human being. Now, again, like I said, those ACTGs get mixed up in some way and in ways that probably I can't even really explain very well. And that's what mm-hmm. becomes the new human being. And that is genetics in general.
Okay.
Now, as we move into epigenetics, which will help give a frame of reference to genetics. Actually, before we go there, I'll say this. Gene editing is something that is coming in the future, which is a whole maybe episode that would be crazy to talk about. But what CRISPR is that CRISPR, this will give a real good sense of what gene editing and potential regenerative medicines of the future are coming, is that gene editing can actually go in, Jen, and can take the T and replace it with a C or whatever that is. Like it can literally replace that, which is where you can, there are so many examples. You can change blindness potentially, right? You can, this was done for a zygote for a twins in China, for example, to remove the HIV strains to make the kids unable to get the HIV from their father. And there's a bunch of just examples where you can do that. You can change, you can mess with mosquitoes in this way and make them unable to transfer, or to draw blood or to transfer their, like there's all sorts of crazy things that bring up all sorts of amazing ethical dialogue about this. And then ultimately what will happen is that we, like right now, if you were to, they call it designer babies. Designer mm-hmm. babies are really like you sort of have several egg and you have several fertilized eggs and you can sort of choose, oh, well, this one has blue eyes and that one has brown, so I'll go with this one, right? Or something like that. That's the best that is happening regularly right now. I don't even know if I should say regularly, that is happening right now to some extent as we sort of pick what we want in our kids as this becomes available. But in the future, which is not being done right now, but could be done, is that we literally replace it on the one egg that we have. Like we don't have to have nine and then choose which one of the nine we want. We just go and change the one that we want, right? So that's gene editing. The CRISPR technology can do that. And that's where the world is really exploding in scientific research on this sorts of stuff. And of course, there will be regulations around this for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So that's editing in a nutshell. Now, as we move to, that's genetics along with a little understanding of editing right now. Now, if we move to epigenetics, what epigenetics is I'll tell it to you in a couple different ways. In one way, our DNA is creating RNA, which is creating proteins. And that's what is called the, many of us in school have heard of the central dogma. So your DNA all the time, remember DNA is in basically every cell of your body, and it's constantly sending messages to create RNA, which then sends a message to create a protein. Now, the reason why that's important to understand is because protein is just everything that we are made of. Proteins make up our hormones, make up everything, all of our chemistry that moves around is essentially a protein, some sort of regulatory factor protein. The enzymes are proteins. Does that make sense? So basically DNA creates RNA to create protein, which is everything, all of our chemistry in our body. Now, this is happening thousands and thousands of times per second in every single cell of our body. We are constantly creating, doing gene expression. We are constantly taking the DNA and creating the RNA, which is creating the protein. Now, what epigenetics talks is essentially a discussion of is that whatever genetics you have in place, there is a chemistry around the genetics. So remember, we have ACTG base pairings, and then we have a chemistry of enzymes and proteins that is just constantly inundating and surrounding this area, which actually affects which RNA are created, which thereby determines which protein is then created. So although your, and here's a great way to maybe look at it, although your DNA is fixed or set, The chemistry surrounding your DNA is not. That chemistry is actually being adjusted moment by moment all the time. And so I'll often, let's put it this way. If the three steps of epigenetics can be collapsed down into this, it would be, here's the 1, 2, 3. Number one is we're constantly creating chemistry all the time. It's just constantly happening. That's what genetics is. That's what the central dogma is. That's what gene expression is. It's just happening all the time. That's step one. Step two is we do something or we do nothing or we don't do anything, right? So right now you and I are sitting down talking. That is something that is giving input to the system. And the system epigenetically is saying, oh, they're sitting down doing this thing. We need to maybe create a chemistry environment to help facilitate that thing they're doing. So number one is chemistry is always being created. Number two is we do something that then gives signals to affect which chemistry is going to be created. And then step number three is new chemistry is created. That's it. So it's actually not even that exciting when you look at it from that point of view. This is the stuff that's been going on all the time.
Yeah, never mind. This is boring. Just kidding.
And that's the funny part about it. And this has been written about too, is that, we talk about epigenetics in this fantastical way, but really this is just what's been happening a lot. But the reason why it's so important is because for so long, people have said, well, whatever your genetics are, that is what the outcome is. And there's really, in other words, the story given was there's nothing really you can do about it. There was a defeatism of, oh, that's my genetic code, and that's what's going to then play out. But as you look at epigenetics, you start to see that, well, gosh, literally everything you do. So if, Jen, right now, you and I were to start going for a run, well, that would be this. Remember, we have chemistry being created for sitting down right now and hanging out. Then we go for a run together while we're on the podcast here. And that's step number two, which means that we are now doing something that's affecting our chemistry. And then step number three means that our brain says, okay, well, we better adjust our chemistry because this is the lifestyle or the decisions that this human being is doing. Now, how does this work on a chemistry level is that the ACTG, is the keys of the piano. And if you imagine a piano, it's fixed, right? That's right. Your piano. That's the piano of Jen, the piano of James. That's your piano. That doesn't change now. That's genetics. That's not going to change. So if your piano happens to have AAAATTT, okay, that's yours. Now, here's the fun part, though, is that your genes are, and I didn't say this before, but your genes are made up of sequences of base pairs. So there could be a sequence of 100 or a sequence of 100,000, and that's a gene. Right. And all of those get triggered to be turned on or off by the chemistry around them all at the same time. So let's say you have a piano keyboard, and I don't play the piano. I don't know how many keys there are. Let's just pretend there's 100. And let's say that the first 10 is one gene, and then the next 30 is another gene. And then there's, you know, other things going on. Well, your epigenetics, your lifestyle, and what you do determines whether you play the first 10 keys or the second 30 keys, or whether you go and try to play around with the other 60 keys that are on there that are presumably broken up into various genes. That's it. That's epigenetics, is that our lifestyle, and that means the way we breathe, the way we move, the way that we eat, our lifestyle choices, and believe it or not, we'll get to this in a moment, the way you think, literally turning your genes on and off, because you are the player of your piano keys. Your piano keys are your genes, but you are your epigenetic chemistry influence. Now I'm going to pause there for a moment and see where we're at.
I love that you do that. I love how exciting this can be when I talk to you about it. I actually want to move forward to attitude, because I knew mindfulness was going to come up, because now that we have the foundation of all of this, it's, well, how can we play our keys better, right? Isn't that sort of where we're going this? That's if we're the piano and our keys can be played in different ways, which is a great analogy, because it makes sense, then how do we play more beautifully? And that's what you're going to talk about, right?
Now, none of this now is going to be really a surprise if you're a student of natural or holistic health. And I'll go to mindfulness, but remember, if you breathe diaphragmatically, then that triggers a certain thing. If you move, you need to have some sort of movement, and you have to choose which one is right for you, whether it's strength training or cardio or, you know, slow rhythmic movements. I don't know. Nutrition, again, you have to pick the right one that's gonna sort of trigger you in the right way. Lifestyle. And then so mindfulness. Now, here's where the majority of the mindfulness stuff that I know comes from, and it comes from the telomere research. Now, telomeres are so you have all these ACTG, hundreds of thousands of strands of them, but at the end of every DNA, you have I think it's a TTAGG sequence. It's whether I'm getting that exact sequence right or not, it's a repeating sequence of just the same TAG sequence. And that's important, because every time that you duplicate a cell, and therefore that's essentially life. When you stop duplicating cells, you die. So every time that you are replicating your cells, those are what's called the bumpers, like car bumpers. These are the bumpers that get sort of damaged along the way to prevent damage of the actual main DNA sequence. So you essentially lose telomere length over the course of time. And that's what determines that you get, you know, closer and closer to death. This is one determinant of, you know, scientifically, of when a person will die, is when you can't replicate your DNA anymore, because you don't have, for example, telomeres at the end. Now, mind you, this is one of probably multiple different ways to look at death, but it is one that's being discussed in the genetic and epigenetic realm now. And what they have found in research is, and I don't have the quote in front of me, but it's literally negative thoughts shorten your telomeres. And so there you go, being able to manage stress and therefore having an optimistic outlook on life has been shown to, and there's many other factors to this too, but has been shown to increase length of telomeres. And then here's the really amazing part. And this is really the final, the step three of my big outline here, is that whether we're talking about mindfulness or other epigenetic factors, they are now being referred to as transgenerationally passed on, which means that they're finding that the babies born to the moms and dads who have the, who are not the negative thinkers, have longer telomeres and therefore are healthier for their then duration of their life. They start out with a wow, healthier sequence. Yeah, that's pretty radically amazing, right? Especially when we've been coming from this other idea that genetics is sort of, you know, there's not much we can do about it. Again, this is being completely rewritten right now in our science.
So basically what you just said is our attitude, my attitude and your attitude when we get pregnant and through pregnancy changes the child's attitude after birth.
Well, I don't know I would say attitude, it changes the child's attitude, as much as we can say that it changes the child's telomere length.
Okay.
So now which what that turn, child, which in turn creates a healthier foundation for that child to, I mean, quite frankly, your child can then get away with more unhealthy habits in that child's life, right? Because they have a stronger foundational sequence to begin from. So yes, your attitude as a parent gives your child a foundational resilience of health. That is now unquestionably being discussed. And by the way, you know, I mentioned I do a lot of this research. The mindfulness is mind-blowing and amazing. And I want to just say that exercise is also on that list, as are lifestyle and nutritional components. And you know, parents who are, and here's one way to think about it too, just to get a sense of it, is that the father has the 6 months or so leading up to, and this could be debatable, three months, possibly even as low as 10 days, although I certainly would suggest the fathers who are listening to this to give a longer spectrum of time with which to really generate your cells. I think I've heard a long time ago that your entire, all your cells in your body can replace in maybe a year or something like that if with, you know, once you make really good healthy habits. So, but let's go with this idea of, hey, we know we want to have a baby. And so let's give 3 to 6 months of a real healthy, you know, foundation, if that's what it is, if that's what you need to get yourself into a good jump of health mm-hmm. for your family. So as a dad, you want to give that foundation so that when you create your sperm inside your body and then you donate right. that sperm for your child, that's the moment that it's the biggest moment for you as a dad. And of course, you want to keep supporting your partner and doing those other plays, but and creating the environment, because of course that's epigenetics, right? You want to create an environment that you can with yep. your partner, with your family, that continues into low stress and empowerment and all of those wonderful things. But if you had to just point at one particular moment, that's the moment that the dad is giving that his length of telomeres and other epigenetic sequences that are being talked about transgenerationally passing to the child. Now that's probably a little different than the mom, because as I said, mom is born with all of her eggs. And so again, I'm not a geneticist. I would love to, you know, one day I'll ask this question to a geneticist, but it seems to me that mom then of course provides that 9 month, the most critical 9 months of the child's life, aside from that perhaps conception moment, is being determined by that mom and her mindset, her nutrition and exercise and habits like that. It's 9 months of a gift that you give your child through the chemistry that you are creating inside your body that then potentially gets transferred transgenerationally to your little one. Once the little one is outside of your body, well, then you now become an external component. You become the environment. And of course, we know then that epigenetics is determined by the environment, right? And so now that's the role of the mom and the dad both together equally for the next 18 years or more. That's then the next role, of course, of creating an empowering environment as much as possible. I'll also insert here that there's no such thing as perfect environment. That is, it's literally impossible. If you look at like parenting structures, you know, the well-intentioned person who is a helicopter mom causes a certain set of positive and negative things in the child, and then the detached parent who is not in the it also causes an equal sort of set of positive and negative attributes and effects. And so the take-home message here is certainly not to be overwhelmed that you have to do it perfect, but rather just be in line with you, be authentic with your beliefs, your values, and just keep working toward your own personal growth is really the best way to go about doing it in the end.
I really want to point this out because we have 18 kids and 10 of them came from adoption or social services and stuff like that. And all of them are adults. And so it's really fascinating because I know all the birth parents. I've met them all. I wanted to have that. It was so important to me because I knew when my kids got older, especially the kids that I adopted or took in at a younger age that didn't know their biological family, their biological parents. And as you're talking about this, it is striking to me thinking about my kids' personalities, kind of behaviors, attitudes, mindsets, and knowing the biological parents and where they were at. I have kids, like I have three kids from the same mom with three different dads, and two kids with the same mom with two different dads. I'm trying to think of the spreadsheet. And so it's so striking to me looking at them as all adult children now and knowing them growing up, some of them from birth, at the latest at 10 years old. So having my kids from birth to 10, no, one of them at 12. But, you know, like looking at them as individuals who are adults and knowing their history, but then raising them, how striking this conversation is.
Well, I'm hearing you talk and I'm sort of waiting for the, well, tell us what is it that's coming to your head? Because remember you have such a unique experience.
Right.
And so I want to know, like, what is the striking part? Because they've come, you know, you've had three kids, for example, all from the same mom, but three different dads, and, mm-hmm. and then their personalities and who they are, but they've been raised now in your environment. What does that mean? What have you learned? What can you tell us?
Well, I mean, I feel like I can see who struggles with addiction because they come from addictive parents. I'll give you one example and you can tell me if this is what you're looking for. So two of the kids, same moms, different dads. One I adopted at two. One I was there when she was born. And the one that was there when she was, I was there when she was born. So, I mean, I breastfed her. I've had her entire life since the moment she was born. And now she's 21. Mm. And I remember when she was a kid, she was the hardest kid to get to sleep. And I knew the mom through the pregnancy from 18 weeks on. And, she has stripper hours. There's no polite way to say that, right? Like her sleep cycle is the same of a stripper, and her mom was a stripper when she was pregnant with her. Not that she wasn't with the older one. The older brother that I adopted at two is autistic. And I have always felt like the level of neglect, which turned into physical abuse in its own way. Like he was left in the crib for days at a time or in a high chair for hours at a time, never having a diaper change with moldy bottles. And that level of neglect that became physical abuse and the illnesses that he came into the system with, and then him being autistic. Like, I don't think, I personally feel like autism can be triggered genetically Like, you can give birth to a child who's autistic and you haven't done anything, quote, wrong. Mm. And I also feel like autism can be brought on as a product of your environment. And I have no science to prove that. I just have my own experience, because I know perfectly healthy, wonderful parents who have given birth and that child's been autistic. They haven't done anything wrong, yeah. right? It happened and there wasn't really a way that you can see that it was controlled. And I know of two instances that I can think of off the top of my head where the child was born and there was nothing necessarily wrong with them from birth. I know that that's true with one of them. I don't know if that's true with my son, but I know at 2 years old when I adopted him and his history and illnesses that it is possible he was born with nothing wrong, but as a product of his environment, autism was triggered. Again, no scientific proof, but lots of curiosity. And I look at how they have responded to the pregnancy environment and with him that first just 2 years, and how much, and mental health of my daughter who I had at birth. I had her from birth. Like, they're environmentally, at least for the first few years, there were no issues in her environment at all that would have led her to have stripper hours. And I remember having a conversation with her about that once. And I'm like, it's just so frustrating. Your sleep schedule is so frustrating because it's so disruptive to you getting up in the morning for school. And it's so disruptive to the family specifically to me, if I am up with you until you fall asleep when you're a little child, that it really impacts our environment and you more specifically. And I'm like, it's just so curious that nature versus nurture, that you are hardwired to have this circadian rhythm, right? This sleep cycle that has nothing to do with your home environment and everything to do with genetics, and you have stripper hours. She was really mad at me because I said it that way. And I'm like, this is not a put down to your mother, to yourself, to your genetics, to anything. It just kind of is a fascinating outside perspective because I have this information. So I really see that in my daughter, who's now 13, whose mom passed away when she was 2, and I'm the only mom she knows. And yet, because her dad knows her mom so well, like, they were married and together and had this baby, and then the mom passed away. Even the mannerisms that she's never had a chance to experience. And I know this some in my adopted kids because I know the parents, but not to the level that my husband knows his deceased wife, right? Intimately for years. And now we have this child who never knew her mom, and yet she'll do something that's so Danielle in nature, but she never had the opportunity to pick up that mannerism or facial expression from knowing her mom. Like, how in the world is that a genetic coding? So for me, this exactly. is a super fascinating thing, right? And yet that can be changed.
That's right.
So I know we need to wrap up our conversation, but I want it to at the very least be something that people consider. And in my kids, that I could have a conversation where my daughter, who's 21, has picked up a lot of anxiety and depression and mental health issues that she could potentially, from an epigenetic standpoint, make changes in herself that would significantly alter that trajectory of poor mental health into something of positive mental health. And I think maybe that's what I want to leave our listeners with, whether you're looking at this within the 3 to 6 months before you get pregnant, through the pregnancy, through the environment that you can create raising your kids, and through situations like adoption or death or those outside situations that, like, I have no control over. And yet, even in my adult daughter, how I can assist her in making significant changes in her life that will impact her mental health moving forward, even though we can't do anything about the pre-pregnancy, pregnancy, and all of that.
Yeah.
So yeah. Why don't you end with some thoughts on how we can encourage people or something?
Yeah.
Your thoughts on that.
So we've all been given a certain starting ground. And the best as I understand it right now is that we have to make the best with what we can. And this is where, you know, one way to make the best of it is to look at the five foundations and pick the one that works the perhaps easiest for you right now to make a change with. Some of us will have an easier time remembering to be mindful with breathing into the belly and ribs. Some of us will have an easier time to just say, I need to just go for one walk around the block for 5 minutes, if that's all that it is today. Some of us will have an easier time, you know, taking a bite of carrots before every meal. That's all I'm going to do. If I'm going to just put a vegetable into my meal, if that's what you know, I feel called for. Some of us will be like, oh, I don't have to turn the lights on, you know, so much at night. You know, when the sun goes down, I can start to use side lamps, and I can be conscious of my environment. So I give myself an external cue to turn the genes on for melatonin and, you know, sleep. And then some of us will be like, well, I really like journaling. I'm going to journal 12 things that I feel appreciation for each morning. And that's going to be the thing I'm going to do. So, and then you just do one that's easy, that really already fits into your life. In some way, you try to start with an easy win, and then it feels good to do that. And then somewhere along the line, months later, years later, sometimes it's like, okay, it's time to put the next one on. And this is, I think, the best that we can do is just try to be inspired, you know, surround yourself with people who enjoy what we understand scientifically are the best healthy practices, which do include these things that I'm talking about here. We know that we want to generally be manage our stress more effectively. We generally want to exercise. So surround yourself with people and environments as much as you can. Start to be open to that. Oh, where can I be in community and laugh today? That's a critical factor. I'll put it into the mindset or lifestyle, whichever one. But we need to be open to these things and put ourselves in that environment, schedule them into your planner if you need to, but that's
it. I agree.
And somewhere along the way, you'll look back and you'll be like, oh, look at that. A few years ago, I wasn't really doing hardly any of these things. And now I do a few of them and I feel better. And I do sleep better now, or I do, you know, I'm not quite as reactive as I once was because I practiced some of this mindfulness stuff of just being aware of what my brain was doing, you know, when someone said that thing, that trigger thing. So, that's my best advice is that you pick one and remember, this is just one episode, one signpost along the way.
Right.
And you're going to have many of these. Use this one to initiate something that you've been meaning to do or that your intuition tells you is a good one or that got excited for you today. Initiate that and keep it as long as you can as a new habit. And use it and continue to remain open to putting yourself into an epigenetic environment that is one that we know is going to serve you better instead of keep dragging you down.
James, thank you so much for being on today. I knew I was watching the time and I was expecting us to go a little over because it's you and me. No, this is good. It's good. I appreciate you so much. And all the links in the show notes are there for our past 7 episodes and ways to get in touch with you and all that information. So I really appreciate you so much. Thank you.
I appreciate you too so much. I've really enjoyed this and I love this conversation and I would love to answer any questions for your viewers at all. You know, we have blogs explaining this on our site too and a little bit more if you want that. But otherwise, yes, thank you. I appreciate you, Jen.